Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. And today, that interesting person, and I know he's a little nervous, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be interesting, is my good friend, Rob Biesenbach. Rob works with leaders who want to be more persuasive and authoritative in everything they do. That's quite the goal, everything. But that means that they're goal is to break free from death by PowerPoint, telling their story and communicating like a human should. Also, that they can connect more meaningfully with the audiences that they're trying to reach and to get the results they want. His latest book is the Amazon bestseller, Unleash the Power of Storytelling, Win Hearts, Change Minds, Get Results. I'm already fired up. Rob, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to this conversation. And of course, one thing that helps me look forward to this conversation as well is the beer I'm drinking from our sponsor, Temperance Brewing Company. Did you like that segue? I thought it was pretty good. But I am drinking the Temperance Basement Party, which is an American lager. And I have to read what it says on the side of the can. Like the best basement parties, our lager is uncomplicated, unfiltered, and down for whatever. Easy drinking and exceedingly refreshing. Basement Party takes us back to the when anything could back takes us back to when anything could happen. There you go. These days, I think anything can happen still. So cheers.
Wow, man, all I'm drinking is ice water. I should have fired one up myself, but I still got a little more work to do, which I know shouldn't stop me.
Right. You know, I mean, that makes it seem like I don't have anything else to do.
No, I didn't mean to imply that.
Oh, I wish. Here's my question for you. And I think you're a good person to answer this question. Why has storytelling become such a buzzword lately? Like everybody's, especially in the marketing and sales and communication world, but just everywhere we hear about storytelling. Why is it a big deal?
Well, I know why it's a big deal because it's important. I don't know why it's become so overhyped and it's grown into what I call the storytelling industrial complex with this vast network of, well, people like me, experts and authors and speakers and consultants. And it's just too much. It's bombarding us with all this information about storytelling. You know, my third book came out is on storytelling and it outsold my first two and it's over their lifetimes in its first year. And I don't think I've gotten that much better at writing books. I just think this is like a really hot topic. And so why? You probably go back and find Patient Zero, some author.
right.
Wrote something about story. Maybe Nancy Duarte, then it all just took off from there, but I don't know.
Well, so tell me what storytelling is. Or maybe even better, like what is storytelling not, right? Because usually when something gets overhyped, we lose the kernel of truth that's actually in there, right? So
yeah,
is there like some confusion maybe now about what storytelling is?
I think there is. And maybe because, you know, I work with people specifically as part of my work. I do other things. But one of the things I do is I help people with very specific stories. You're working on the story of who you are and what your business is, how you describe it in storytelling terms. You want to help employees navigate change with a story from that will give them hope, something like that. But very often clients come to me and say, we need to work on our story. And I dig in and really what they want is not so much their story, it's just the way they communicate, you know, like a presentation perhaps. So a lot of things get called a story and like, an inspirational quote is not a story. A customer testimonial in and of itself is not necessarily a story. Most case studies I read are awful and they're definitely not stories. So,
so what has to be in a story then, right? So my guess is a tweet is not a story.
Not necessarily. I mean, a tweet can be a story. I mean, you know.
Oh, okay. 240 characters or 208?
It depends. Yeah. Like, I think, you know, there's a whole six-word story. Hemingway did that. Sale, baby shoes never worn. So a story has to have certain fundamental elements, a character.
Okay.
And that can be an organization or a person, ideally a person. There has to be some kind of goal. You know, this character wants something. And there has to be an obstacle or a challenge. They are thwarted in some way in achieving that goal, and it has to resolve. So that sets up the conflict, the tension between the, you know, what you want, your goal, and what's stopping you for the obstacle. That provides the conflict that drives the story. So, you know, too often people just want to tell some kind of rosy story that has no conflict, that has no negative, and it doesn't work.
I'm reminded of the scene from The Matrix where the evil Agent Smith tells Neo, "Yeah, the first version of Earth that we created, it was all happy and nobody believed it." Right. Like, and what did he say? Entire crops were lost. Because right, we where's the conflict? Where's the challenge? Where's the pain?
Right.
So when you're, let's say, dealing with a client, or even in thinking about the book you wrote, how do businesses talk about, how do you talk about conflict in a way that's contextually appropriate? Because that one thing I see a lot is, especially in you know, quote unquote business storytelling, they make the stakes seem a lot higher than they really are. It's like, you're a graphic design company. Hold on a second. I mean, even when, and during my sales career, I've often told salespeople, we're not brain surgeons, right? You know, if we don't do a good job today, nobody dies. Let's take the pressure off.
Yeah.
So like, how do you have, I said, like, contextually appropriate conflicts?
Well, yeah, it just reminds me of, I think most brand stories kind of leave me cold. And there's one out right now for Domino's where the Domino's worker is just utterly, she's actually choked up talking about the fact that they accidentally left a customer's cheesy breadsticks off their order, you know, and they're expecting me to really believe that.
Hey, I mean, come on, when you need cheesy breadsticks, you need cheesy breadsticks.
I know, yeah. But it's just, yeah, it's to me like this phony stakes. It's like, come on. So, yeah, I think that's a good point, that it has to be, the stakes have to be, what did you say, contextually appropriate?
Appropriate.
And that all just means audience focused. If your stakes aren't that interesting to your audience, then you're probably targeting the wrong audience, or maybe your story is not good enough. So yeah, you don't have to over dramatize it. I mean, people feel like, here's the thing. One of the reasons people get psyched out about stories is they watch TED Talks and Oprah and Netflix, and they think they've got to just blow people out of their water with their stories.
Right.
And I've been talking a lot about simple moments. You don't need to make people laugh or cry, but if you make them just nod and you have that glimmer of recognition that says, "Huh, I know what you mean. I've been there. I've spilled coffee on my lap in traffic. It sucks." You know, that's just a very simple connection. That's all you want to do is connect, and people go, "Aha, I get it."
I like that. I'm thinking of another guest we had on this season, Ryan Roten, who said, "Been there, done that." Is an important part of storytelling.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I love that.
So when people are crafting their story, then what do you see as kind of like the mistakes that they make when that they are trying to go too big with it, or that they're not actually having a story where they think there is one?
Several. It's that one where they psych themselves out thinking it's got to be super dramatic. Another one is clutter. They just put too much stuff in their story. One that I've been really harping on lately is finding specific moments. We tend to be very general in our stories. So I was working with this nonprofit and this country director in Mozambique at this nonprofit. And she said, When I got to the country, we were doing really well in that country. Donations were rolling in. We were sitting pretty. And a few years later, there was a downturn. Donations started to dry up. And I knew we had to turn things around. And so we did this and that. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay, so give me was there a specific moment where you realized things had gone off the rails? And that's what you want to do. Is you want to find those specific relatable moments to bring the story to life. So for her, it was like she was in a pitch meeting with a new donor, and she saw that he had great ideas for what he wanted to do, but her team was just feeding them dry old templates, the stuff that they've done a million times, not what the donor wanted, was excited about. And so
right,
it didn't come through. She said, I realized we weren't listening. And so especially at those turning points, when things go wrong and when things get better, I want to know, where were you? What were you feeling? What was the setting right when you had this realization or that this thing happened?
I like that. So it's not only about being specific in the story, but I think you're saying by being specific in the story, you're letting your listener or your audience, like, that's the point where they can connect, because on a human to human level, they go, I know what that feels like.
Right.
Even
if you've never been to Mozambique and we're in charge of a nonprofit as a country director, you've been in a meeting that goes south and you knew exactly.
Right. I mean, the human emotions are pretty universal and pretty basic, right? I mean, you've felt embarrassment or excitement or shame or, you know, kind of those core things. So if you can kind of, sounds like if you can tap into that at some level, that's really where that influence comes in. Cause now I go, oh, all right, I can recognize that human moment.
Yeah. It's a moment. It's an emotion, it's a setting, it's a feeling or a sense, something like that. Well, you know, people think that the more general you are, the more universal it will be, but actually that just makes it more boring. The more specific you are, it draws people in and it works.
So this will sound like a complete non sequitur, but I guarantee you it's not. So what you just made me think of is actually rap music. Mm-hmm. Because all of the songs that I can remember, some of these now almost 30 years like later, were all the rappers who were storytellers. And it's interesting because not only I think does it make it easy to remember, which is a whole other thing about storytelling, but there's still moments where like I can recognize the emotion that person is talking about. I think about the Fresh Prince. Well before he was, you know, Will Smith. Yeah, that was the first guy. That was the first music I almost really ever had, like the tape I had. But he would tell these stories, and I would go, "Oh, I know what it's like to, you know, be upset with your parents, or I know what it's like to be, you know, embarrassed in front of a girl." And then all of a sudden, like that resonance just stuck with me. Whereas a lot of music, just in general these days, I think there's not a lot of story to it anymore, which is not as resonant, right? That's why we just forget stuff. We just remember the tune and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think about, I think I posted.
You didn't think we'd be talking about hip hop, did you?
No. Yeah. And it was, you know, it's not a non sequitur. I mean, some of the best storytellers are musicians. I posted something by Bruce Springsteen the other day. I mean, he is a tour force storyteller. He is a great American storyteller, right up there with, you know, all the best. Tom Sawyer, I mean, Mark Twain. I mean, he's amazing.
That's interesting you say that, because now that I'm thinking about some of like the artists that really kind of stand the test of time, so to speak. Springsteen is definitely among these, is this idea of being able to tell a story that you can see yourself within, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not, you know, born to run.
Right. Even though if you're not eluding the law or, you know, work, he said in his Broadway show, he said, I have never worked I write about factory workers, and I've never worked in, you know, a 9-to-5 job in my life. He said, I write about cars. I don't have a license to drive. You know, he's able to conjure those worlds, and it's amazing.
Well, and going back to what you're saying, a story needs those songwriters like Springsteen, I think, touch on those points, right? There is a character. There is, sometimes it's him, sometimes it's another person. This is not Bruce Springsteen, but it's the guy who I always confused him with when I was younger, John Cougar Mellencamp, right?
Yeah.
Jack and Diane, yeah. Right? There's literally two specific characters. And even when I was young, I kind of got, you know, like the melancholy in that song. As I've gotten older, I'm like, oh, I get it.
Uh-huh.
But right, there's conflict, there's some sort of resolution or not in that song.
Sure.
But like all the best, they like have that conflict. They have that goal that the character does have. And then a resolution, sometimes happy, sometimes not, but it has that arc, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, he can be talking about, you know, I got a 59 Chevy with a 398 fuelie head and a hearse on the floor, whatever the hell that is. It's like, it's a car term.
Right.
And you're like, what the hell's that? But then, you know, the song is about loneliness and trying to find meaning in your life and redemption and all these other things that we can all relate to. And when it's painted on a very specific picture, it just seems much more real than if he got up there and told people, you know, I have a musician or a storyteller explain to you, it's important to have dreams, son.
Like,
right.
You're like,
hard.
Okay, thanks.
Life is hard.
Right. Well, going back to that idea of like the TED Talks or us looking at Oprah, the best storytellers, even though I think too often we do try to make every, you know, as a speaker myself, I know you are as well. Sometimes we're like, oh, do we have to be at TEDx level, you know, or TED level every speaking engagement? The best ones, and I think the ones that kind of made it a thing early on were these people telling these very big, talking about these very big, you know, trends in the world, but they were also always like very specific with their stories, right? Mm-hmm. They're always like, let me tell you about a person who lives there, or let me tell you about my experience. I still remember one, I forget the guy, but he was a chef who was talking about why we need to preserve wetlands because it's a great way of filtering out the pollution we're putting into the earth.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always he started out by going, I want to talk about this fish. And he had some certain fish that was like delicious to eat, but also was great at cleaning out algae or something. I don't know. But I still remember it. There's no, in all of this, the information that I get into my world daily, I remember this talk from years ago.
Interesting. Yeah. You start, you know, Malcolm Gladwell does that really well in his books.
Mm-hmm.
He'll explore in a chapter a major sociological phenomena. And he starts with one small detail like that, a fish or a moment or a person or, you know, just something little. And he blows it up into this big thing. And then he brings it back home. You know, he brings it back around. It's textbook.
Right. And I mean, and all of his books basically are textbooks in learning how to write like that. He's one of my favorite authors.
Yeah. And the irony is they don't read like textbooks. That's why we read them. Some of his stuff is seen as junk science by some of his peers. But you know, he's a New York Times bestseller because he explains this stuff in ways that ordinary humans will get engaged in.
Absolutely. I mean, just the fact that he gets people talking about a lot of the ideas, whether it's the tipping point or Outliers was huge for him. It was a great book and made me realize why Bill Gates started Microsoft. And you start going, oh, the resonance of your time and place as a human has an impact on your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole nother conversation, right? But the fact that we could talk about it, not necessarily comfortably, but we had a way into it, like that really says a lot about his ability as a writer.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So when people are, you know, whether it's you're talking to a client or even thinking about the work you do, what is a good place for people to get to the story in the message they want to share?
Tell me just what exactly you mean. How do you find the story, or where do you position it? Or
no, that's exactly right. How do you find the story? So, for example, you mentioned earlier case studies, right?
Yeah.
Which are usually really boring, and nobody wants to read them. But companies make them because they think that's how they're going to, you know, sell and market themselves.
Yeah.
So if you go to a company, and they're like, "Hey, we've got this case study," and you read it. Lots of facts and figures, but there's no story in it. Like, how do you find the story in that?
Yeah. Well, first, I would get away from the 30,000 foot institutional level. You know, our team of consultants came in and helped X company with their, you know, streamline their manufacturing processes.
I think I've read that case study.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? But if you started instead saying, you know, Phil works on the line and every day he goes home hating himself because the product he turns out every day is defective and it needs to go through, you know, a second round because the machinery that he's been working on is not, you know, is not geared for this, you know, whatever. Something
right.
Like something. And I think that's an actual thing based on my past experience with a manufacturing company. If you can bring it down to a human level, a human person, you know, an actual individual human having a problem. And even if it's a very specific problem, we can still relate to some of the emotions at stake, like frustration, annoyance, pride, shame, fear, all of those things. If you can just begin it like that, then maybe blow it out to, okay, this is the larger strategy that we went about. And then be easy on the data. You know, you don't have to hit them with 10,000 facts. You can accompany it with a fact sheet or some backup data. But, you know, have a story, have an assertion, have a few proof points, and then, you know, get out.
I mean, I love that. That's be light on the data, right? Because nobody's had their heart changed because they saw a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. Very true. But I love that idea of just of making it really about a person in the organization. And that, you know, it's funny you say that because I've often said to potential clients who I'm going to go, whether speak for their organization or do sales coaching and consulting for their team, I always say, like, hey, your person is walking back to their desk and sitting there at 1 o'clock on a Tuesday and they have no idea what to do. Right. And so they sit there and they do some web surfing. They think they might have to prospect. And so they're going to be on LinkedIn for half an hour, not really doing anything, but they just don't know what to do. Let me help, right? And then I can say, hey, let me help come in and prevent that from happening.
Right.
But I think I could definitely shore up that story a little bit. But it sounds like that's kind of what you're doing is like, say, hey, make it really specific to the challenges that resonate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's been very, and very specific to your audience. I think that's a great technique. Yeah.
I'm patting myself on the back.
Well done.
Thank you so much. So besides the crafting of the story, do you see anything else as far as, and hey, we got a couple of minutes here, so I know we could probably talk about this for hours, but do you see like any other major problems in the delivery of the story besides just the finding the actual story that really holds people back from communicating clearly?
You
or communicating like a human?
Yeah, delivery technique, the way they tell the story.
Yeah.
You know, I think the number one thing is they have to believe it.
Okay.
This sort of gets back at a content thing. I can't help it. I'm a content, you know, oriented person. But you're much more, as a storyteller, you're much more likely to connect to a story that you have personally experienced or witnessed than one you found online or heard somewhere that some other speaker talked about. So use your stories from your own personal experience, not some story we've heard a million times about supposedly how Abe Lincoln drafted the Gettysburg Address in the back of an envelope on the way up to the ceremony. Not true, by the way, which is another downfall of Googling for stories. But Tell me a story that you've actually participated in or experienced. That way, you're going to be much more connected to the story. When you're connected to the story, we're going to connect with you. You're going to have energy. You're going to have passion. You're going to have engagement. You'll be living and breathing it in the moment and all of those things that are critical to your performance of the story.
I like that. It's the veracity of the story comes through is kind of, I guess, what you're saying, right? I can believe you because if it happened to you, you can't fake that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It just feels more real. You can see it. You can see it in the energy and the authenticity and the passion of the storyteller. Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of like when we're at a dinner party, we don't want to hear somebody tell a story about something that happened to somebody they know. We want to hear the story about what happened to them.
Right. Right. It's much more, yeah, it's much more interesting and relatable. Exactly.
Oh, okay. I like it. This is a non sequitur, but it's all right because we always talk about beer on the show.
That's right.
What have you been drinking lately that you are enjoying?
Well, you know, this is I'm a heretic here for a long time. I got to tell you, I am not a super fussy guy when it comes to many things.
That's fair. Nothing wrong with that.
So for the longest time, I just give me a bottle of Bud Light.
Okay, well, that might be a problem because there's not being fussy and then there's actively damaging your soul.
Well, you know, what I liked about Bud Light is, you know, my younger days, what I liked about Bud Light is I could drink a lot of them. You know, my friend sitting around with a Sam Adams or a heavy beer, you know, I was outpacing them 2-1 at times. So, but in my advanced years, what I'm finding is, especially with a meal, it's not very satisfying, like with Thai food or a pizza. And I've been actually drinking closer to, you know, real beers. Like my latest is Pale.
Welcome.
It's not super adventurous. It's not super dark, but like a pale ale.
Okay. There's some great pale ales.
Sierra Nevada or some of the ones I get around town. They just have, you know, a little extra body and heft to them.
But still that nice balance. I think you're right on with especially a good Thai food or even like Indian food. You need a little body. You can't have it too heavy, right? Sure. But just something that you can definitely take a good swallow of after you've eaten something a little too spicy.
Yeah. It's a nice compliment. So I don't know, maybe my palate has gotten refined. Maybe the fact that I drink fewer beers than I used to, that I like to savor the actual, you know, individual beers. I don't know.
There you go. Right. Or as we get older, we realize there's only so many beers we can have in this life. Why waste it on bad beer? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And hey, I shouldn't even pick on Bud Light. You know, I try to be open-minded, but it always gave me headaches. I think that's, you know, when I was younger, I would drink it. And it probably didn't help that I drank it kind of, it sounds like maybe you did, which is, well, hey, if I can drink 6 or 8 or more of these in the evening, you know, or, you know, at the party that we're at, that's great.
Right, right. Yeah, and I thought of the, you know, beers that get derided.
Right.
I found Bud Light was a pretty easy drink. You know, it didn't ask a lot of you and it never made you flinch.
Here's what I found, no matter how big a beer snob somebody is, they always have their go-to, as you would say, beer that gets derided. For me, mm-hmm. I will happily drink a High Life or a Schlitz, right? Not a problem. Sure. You know, I know people that give them a Miller Genuine Draft, totally fine. Or a Coors, great. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes that's just what you need.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you. And I do like Miller High Life of those kinds of beers. I don't like Miller Light, but I do like High Life.
Well, especially if you drink Bud Light, just, and again, I don't even drink these beers often, but like Miller Light and Bud Light definitely taste different. So I can see if you like one, you're not going to like the other.
Very different. Yeah.
Again, would I argue that either of them taste good? Well, again, whatever floats your boat.
Right.
And before I get the big powers that be angry at me, not like they're listening, but if they ever did, they'd come and make my life miserable. Although the big boys, Diageo, anytime you want to sponsor us, you know, I love my Guinness. So come on over. this is probably a good time to wrap things up. Rob, I always ask my guests at the end, what's one piece of advice you'd give someone to help them have a better day today?
You know, something I've been thinking a lot about lately in the current environment we live in is empathy. We're pretty empathetic people when it comes to people who are clearly deserving of our empathy, a flood victim, a tornado victim. You know, we reach out and we help. But I would challenge people, the person who cuts you off in traffic, who bumps into you without saying excuse me, who cuts it in front of you in line or does something apparently thoughtless, stretch yourself and see if you can think, well, maybe that person's going through something today that is deserving of my understanding. And maybe I won't either lash out at them literally, or I won't even think bad thoughts about them. I'll try to put it another way. So I think we could really use a lot more of that in our current environment.
I think that's fantastic. That's a good exercise for all of us and a good reminder for all of us. Thank you for that. By the way, if you want to follow up with you, Rob, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on many of the social media channels. If you can spell my name, you can find me. I'm the only Rob, B-I-E-S-E-N-B-A-C-H, Rob Biesenbach around. I suppose the website is the hub of it all. And again, it's the first thing that turns up when you Google Rob Biesenbach.
Perfect. And we'll make sure to put all the links in the notes. Thank you again to our sponsor, Temperance Beer Company. I do think they are a few notches above Bud Light.
I agree. I've had their stuff.
Their American Lager Basement Party has been quite tasty as we've gone through the conversation today. And by the way, craft brewers, if you'd like to be a sponsor, please reach out. We'd love to drink your beer while having an interesting conversation. And also, if you've had a good time listening in, please do hit the subscribe button. We'd love to make sure that you find out about future shows, and definitely go back and listen to our previous shows. There's a lot of great conversations that we've had. And everyone, I really appreciate your time. And with that, have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar, and we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.